What's going on?
You go? I go? Who's starting this?
I don't know. Just so you know, I don't watch when you record without me. I don't go back and watch.
No, I don't watch anything you do either.
Okay, good.
Do we want to turn a light on in here? It's kind of dark.
No, I kind of like it. I like the ambiance.
Yeah, we're going dark today.
I mean, look at me. I'm dark.
You are. No. Yeah, yeah. Always.
Nice outfit.
Yeah. You know, Scotch and Stone. I actually had something else on. And I was walking out and Kendall goes, "Did you see Brandon's outfit?" And I was like, "No, what is it?" And she goes, "Oh, it's a matching Scotch and soda."
She went and changed.
So I literally went and just.
That's embarrassing. That's a grown man changing to match a child.
It gave me humor.
We look like dickheads. If one of us does it, fine. But now we look like dickheads.
We always look like assholes.
Can we get a sponsorship from Scotch and Soda, please?
Oh my gosh, I would love that. That would be nice.
Maybe we should have our people reach out to their people. And by our people, I mean Kamwella sending them an email to customer support.
Some people I know like your stuff. Would you send them stuff?
They get 3,000 views a week.
Yeah. Hey, that Sean O'Malley one we did got like 3,010.
Well, good. That's awesome.
We're moving up in
another 100,000 and maybe they'll respond to our email.
Yeah, no, they're not responding to our email. They should never respond to our email. I was scrolling through YouTube and I saw, or I was just on there doing this stuff with fruit stuff. And then before you get to your, like, what is it, YouTube Studio, the regular app shows up, whatever. And I see a video.
Okay.
MMA Guru.
Oh, okay. Yeah, nice.
And, just pulled up, YouTube recommended. Dude had like 80-something thousand views on a video. And I was holy crap. I didn't know.
Oh, he gets views. He pushes it.
I didn't even know like what it was or what he did, anything. And I was like, man, no wonder Brandon's always talking shit. This is like major, major jealousy.
No, I admittedly have.
He's killing us.
No, I know he's got numbers. I admittedly have never watched one of his like YouTube videos. I've seen a clip or two on Twitter, but I've never seen a YouTube video.
Okay.
But I don't know. He just talks shit.
Who does he talk shit about?
Well, him and Christian and him and C-Rod.
Oh.
He said, fuck C-Rod, stupid little Mexican. That's what he said.
He did not.
Oh, he did. Christian said, fuck MMA Guru on his Twitter. You can go check.
Man, well, you're dead to me, Guru.
Yeah, you're dead.
This was a Brandon thing, but you bring C-Rod into it.
He beat his boy, Cameron.
We're all going.
And Cameron was about to take another L this week. Man. What's MMA Guru going to do?
Cameron and Dalgarian, man, you can't beat C-Rod.
Jesus.
So, last week, was fine. You were gone.
Yeah,
everything rested on my shoulders. I was Atlas over here.
That's okay. How'd you feel?
Horrible.
Oh, okay.
You know what I actually did because you weren't here and I had nothing else to do? Kamwella was here. I was here. I put him to task. So I did a quick breakdown video of Sean O'Malley's masterclass over Cheeto, which is actually up on our YouTube. So you guys check it out. It's only like 3 minutes long, 2.5 minutes long, something
Somebody
like that.
Somebody send it in to Scotch and Soda.
Somebody send that to Scotch and Soda. Watch. They send it in to Scotch and Soda and they send Sean O'Malley all the Scotch and Soda. So, but Kamwella did a really good job editing that. Took him like 7 weeks to do it because I wanted like one video clip of O'Malley in there punching him. And there's like 10,000 perfectly aligned clips.
Dude's amazing.
I was like, dang.
Yeah, we underpay him for sure, but we will not pay him more.
For sure. And I don't think he's going to do another video for me because what I expected was something that would take 32 minutes. And then like probably 20 hours of labor later, he gives me this video. And I was like, oh my gosh, you completely outdid yourself. But go check it out. So I did that. I did a breakdown video for that. You were out of town, out over there surfing in California with your floppy hair.
It's not that floppy.
It's a little floppy.
Hey, but I got to meet. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Finish what you're saying.
No. That was really it. And then you made some bets that I was going to lead into that we didn't post on the Discord. So don't go crazy.
Yeah, we'll talk about this. So first, I was out in California. And I met with Coach Ben. If you guys don't know Coach BZ on Instagram, amazing Instagram, lots of cool techniques, lots of just good talking, good theory, just a no bullshit kind of guy. I love it. His class was actually just everything that we do, which I thought was really cool. I have this stupid little limp hand, so I can't really choke people like normally. I can't do like rear naked chokes. And weird enough, like the techniques that he showed was like a one arm rear naked choke and then a short choke in the exact same way that I do the short choke normally. And I was like, wow, like, if there was any class he could have taught, it's almost like he talked to me beforehand and was like, yeah, I'll show this stuff.
I actually saw your post and was like, who's this guy? And I scrolled through his Instagram like a stalker. Like, who's over here trying to show Brandon techniques? That's what I do. And I was looking at the stuff that he was showing, and it was literally all stuff that we do or versions of it or stuff that I really liked. Different details, you know, there was different details and stuff. It's like, oh, I do that. This, not that it was better or worse, just he does it left, I would do something right or whatever. And I really liked everything that he was showing, everything from his MMA stuff to everything. So yeah, shout out to him, man. Shout out to not being an idiot Instagrammer.
Yeah. Oh, no, he's solid. And the class was good. I rolled with a 25er that they had there, really talented Daniel Park. So he was really good. Man, I'm out of shape. But okay, this would be funny. So, you know, we do a lot of calls to action on this show, and literally nobody ever comes through.
No, there's no action. A lot of calls, no action.
I call to action. The only one that has ever kind of taken was Robin O'Neill, and sucked. Like five people were like, hey, yeah, welcome to Miami. That's it. But calls to action. So Coach BZ has a cameo. He does awesome cameos. He'll roast you. He'll give you inspiration. He'll say anything. And he's only got like three requests on Cameo. So it'd be really funny. It's $5. Go on there, request a cameo from him, and just have him like roast people or talk shit. It's great. He's awesome.
Love it. Go do it.
Okay.
But actually do it, guys.
Okay. And then we'll talk about the bets. So this weekend was a cool week. I didn't have time to do the UFC. Honestly, for me, the UFC is like the one thing that I have to do. And then all the regionals are the things that I want to do. And it's like a grind to get through the UFC. And just in general, UFC betting is so hard. First of all, the market is so much bigger.
Even a couple of years ago when we started, the lines were so much more in favor and the matchups were so much more in favor than they've been the last, what is it, 6 months or a year?
Well, it's just more money pouring in, and the lines are a lot sharper and the fights are more competitive. It's just, it's a tough market. Like, especially for someone who bets like idiotic, like I do, like parlays and all kinds of stuff. It's not a good idea, right? And so it's the thing that I get to because I have to, not because I want to. I study and I do it, right? But one thing I did study this week was the first Cage Warriors card. There was two Cage Warriors cards back to back. First Cage Warriors card crushed it, killed it. You know, we were hitting everything. And I had a really good day. And then Bare Knuckle, at nighttime, I was like, man, this is going to be the easiest card of all time. And it started out as such, right? You have Cuban national team boxers knocking out crackheads. It was great. And then we get to this fight, and this guy Thames, he's from the Goat Shed Academy.
Okay.
And I've never seen a more blatant fight fix in my entire life.
Really?
Because you have to look at it like this. There's a lot of guys who will fix fights and they just go down, right? Okay. One punch, I'm taking a dive. But this was in his city in Miami. Right. And, you know, he's got an ego and all that stuff. So basically what he did was he kind of just stood there not taking damage. He would move his head, but never actually threw any punches. So he's not embarrassed by getting knocked out, but he clearly knows he's losing on the scorecards. He was fighting a 40-year-old guy with all first round knockout losses and just kind of stood there and didn't throw anything. And this dude's like 29 and a bunch of knockouts and Goat Shed and all this stuff, right? And, you know, I think there's a lot of stuff behind the scenes with that. There's somebody that actually used to work for Bare Knuckle that messaged me right after and was like, oh, 100%, he got paid really well to do that. And, frustrating, right? So then the next day, I did zero tape study. I trusted the guy in our Discord, Big Bird Pierce, who is an amazing, amazing bettor. He is everything that I wish I could be as a bettor. I think I helped him along the way, and then he kind of took the reins himself, and he's just awesome now. And he posted some underdogs that he liked in Cage Warriors. I studied a little bit and came up with a few totals that barely hit, some really minus EV bets, and I threw a complete punt. It was $100 on a 10-leg parlay with three underdogs and three pick'ems, two big favorites, and then some other fights, whatever. And ended up hitting $100 to win $48,600.
Nice.
And, you know, we had a few people upset, like, man, why didn't you post that? Why didn't you post that? And that's really easy in hindsight to say, why didn't you post that? But the thing is we have, what, 350 members in the Discord. If I post one of those and people tail that every single time, and I keep posting those, the likelihood of those hitting, especially with three underdogs, three pick'ems and whatever else, right? Slim to none. Like, it just doesn't happen. And people don't have the bankrolls to support
throwing money away, because you got to look at stuff like that as a lotto ticket.
It's a lotto ticket.
You buy a lotto ticket, you don't assume you're going to win. And so, like, you know, actually somebody we know posted a pick, they did a dollar bet, and then it was like a 10-leg parlay, made $68 or something like that. And see, that's great.
And it's amazing. Yeah.
But would you do that same thing with $100 or $200? Like, you know that you're going to lose that money. 99 times out of 100.
I have to bear the responsibility for everybody in the Discord, not just thinking of like one or two people, right? And so I have a section there called the Junkyard where I put together a shitload of plays from random organizations, yep, put them all together. And that is those lottery tickets, right? And so every once in a while I'll post them there. But in my little section that I have, I like to post the things I'm confident in.
We have to. That's what we, on the UFC, there are stuff like, we'll go on the show, say there's 12 fights on the card.
Yeah.
We'll get 9 of them right on the card or 10 of them right on the card on the podcast, but we don't necessarily put those on the Discord because like we're not certain about it. And there, a lot of stuff is like very toss-up-y type of stuff. And like you said, we're responsible for that as well. We can't be cavalier.
Yeah, and here's the thing. So my straight bets, my good bets, they fund my lottery tickets, right? And then if I hit, okay, really hits. And if it doesn't, okay, well, I'm still up because of this, right? So I had Connor Wilson who fought on Cage Warriors. I was like, man, this seems like a crazy matchup. He's fighting a guy, low volume, you know, not great grappling, whatever. Like he's clearly the A side and it's a pretty close line. So I posted that. I think I ended up somewhere around $3,000-$5,000 on him, right? So I got paid out pretty decent on that. That bet funded all of my long punts and I ended up losing a lot of those. And the problem is
Hold on. I want to ask a question. You had those two big bets. You had a $48,000 one and then 200 or 250 to 20,000.
Yeah.
So out of those, how many long punts did you do that weekend that you lost?
Yeah, I mean a lot, right? So this is what I was going to say.
It, yeah.
So on the bare knuckle, the problem that I run into is I have a lot of limits, right? My DraftKings account, I can't bet. I think my limit's like $37 on anything that's MMA related. Okay. No good. FanDuel doesn't list them. Caesars doesn't list them. Like there's only a few, you know, books that actually list bare knuckle, for example. And so BetOnline has been my main resource. But if you bet on anything that has to do with a new matchup or a big favorite, you can only bet $100. So,
okay. I'm just going to talk to our producer for a second.
Okay. So basically to get down any real money, you have to bet, you know, you have to just keep mixing these up and doing things to avoid limits, right? So I end up with a balance sheet of like 40 different $100 bets to try to get this core of people that I want. And then Thames throws the fight and now all 40 of those lose, right? Yeah. So it's really unfortunate. I think I threw maybe 10 of those long shots in on that Cage Warriors morning.
Yeah, and
two of them hit and it was great.
See, and that's the thing is, like you threw down 10 long shot bets, we'll just say $1,000. And whether this math works or not, is actual. And that's the thing. Most people don't have $1,000 to lose and you don't want people to lose $1,000. So you're able to bet $1,000 on 10 different bets. One of them hits, you got it, this and that. You're not going to put all those other bets down because people are going to lose money at your expense.
Well, and I posted a 3-leg parlay right in there. Posted a 3-leg parlay that hit and it was plus 300. Okay. Yep. That sets you up for a nice day plus all the other great bets that we've been making. So, you know, basically what I'm saying is like, be happy for people, quit your fucking crying and use the resources. I use the Discord just as much as anybody else. I see what everybody else has to say. I back it up by my own research and I get it. You're paying for picks. You know, you want to.
And we give picks, but we can't do every single bet that you put in gets thrown up on the Discord.
Yeah. You know? I get you're paying for picks and you want the effort to be none. We charge $25 a month. I think that's by far like one of the least for anybody that has any kind of notoriety.
Yeah.
I try to put out just more solid plays, things I have a lot of conviction in. Like you should be getting if you make $26, it should be worth it to you because you're in the profit, right? So be careful, be responsible and be fucking happy for people.
Yeah. Let's talk fights.
All right.
Let's talk fights. We've got UFC Fight Night 2540 Ribas and Namajunas.
Okay.
Let's do it. Hey, before we do, go to the Discord, sign up, like, share. Also, go to Bet Online. We'll put a link in the notes to sign up. They're doing bonuses as always because they're one of the few that'll do a lot of different bets.
Yeah, I love Bet Online.
Yeah. So, all right. So I'm going to start.
Why are you so damn happy?
So I'm excited because when you were gone, I taped 2 out of the 3 women's fights.
And what was the one you didn't tape? Rose and Reba?
No, Macy Chai. No, the last week's Macy Chai's on and Pani Kinzad or whatever that is.
Okay.
So this week I actually taped both women's fights.
Great.
So I actually did. I was going to tape the third and then I saw that one of them had pulled out. I don't know if she has a replacement or not.
Oh, yeah. I was pretty disappointed in that one.
I don't know if that fight is going on or not, but I tried to tape it. But yesterday, the fight was still off, and I don't know if it got flipped back on. But because of that, I intentionally did not tape Muhammad Usman and Mick Parkin, which is the first fight of the night. And here's why. Both of these people, like Parkin in his last fight with Machado, is a, you know, the big dude from Canada.
Kyle.
He just looked so bad. It was so sloppy. Muhammad Usman is like going the distance with Parker Porter decision, just, or was it Jake Collier? I forget, but it was just so bad. And I didn't want to waste my time on something I just did not care about. And I was like, I'm going to tape this women's fight instead. So,
okay.
Give me your thoughts on Muhammad Usman and Mick Parkin, because I refused.
Yeah, I didn't tape it either. I know these guys both pretty well. Weirdly, like, I guess here's my thought about this. Usman, I've bet on Usman a lot, and I hate it because, like, I think he's not good, but I also bet on him a fair amount. And then Mick Parkin, I've always kind of been against him, and I know the performance against Kyle was not good, but Kyle's also a weirdo. Yeah. He is weird. He scrambles. He does things that heavyweights don't really do. He's not super effective with anything, but it's a lot of like unconventional things. And we talk about it a lot. It's really hard to fight somebody who's unconventional, who's just a weird person.
You throw a jab at him and they do a cartwheel.
Exactly. And Usman is not that. He is very basic. He's okay. Big overhands. I'm athletic. I'm big and I'm stiff. And I think that Parkin is going to fare much better here. Maybe there's a strength disparity. Maybe there's a power disparity, but I think that Mick Parkin will probably end up winning. Not like I'm going to go out of my shield on either side. And honestly, the lines aren't wide enough here for me to feel that way. Like if Usman was plus 200, now we're having a different conversation, but I mean, yeah, not a lot of faith. Yeah.
Skip this one. It just didn't interest me. And I was like, I don't want to waste my time on something I don't like when I can spend it on something I want to watch, which is this next fight. Igor Severino and Andre Lima.
Wow. What a great fight.
Oh my gosh. Igor is a little bit taller and a little bit more aggressive.
Do we have any odds? What the hell's going on?
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Igor is plus 150 and Lima is minus 180.
I say Jesus Christ and the voice comes.
He looks like Jesus right now. If you guys could see him.
Oh my gosh.
Don't say that.
Jesus, he saved my life. So Igor is, I want to say a good striker, but he's not like, but then you have Lima, who's a great striker. So it's like, whoa, it's like, but he's good. He's aggressive. He throws, he's overall a very good fighter.
You don't think Igor is a good striker?
No, I do. But then you put him next to Lima, who I just think is a phenomenal striker.
What makes him phenomenal?
So using the terms Lima?
Yeah.
Oh, his balance, he's checking kicks and just firing. He is so calm, just sitting there. People are throwing. And he's not like lunging out of the way. He's like, nope, touching. Just so calm, so relaxed. Fighting a guy who is running like crazy on the contender series.
That was horrible.
Oh, and then you see him in his other fights. He's just so good. And then Lima as well, his hips, man, you take him down, his butt will touch, and he immediately is whizzing, flattening out, popping back up. He's hard to hold down. He will whizzer kick. He'll find his way on top. He'll smash you. I love Lima here. I think Severino, trying to remember his last name, Severino. I think Severino is very good, and I think he's going to win a lot of fights. I just, man, I have a really hard time seeing how he beats Lima with, I mean, Lima has the cardio. He's got the athleticism.
Does he have the cardio? Are you sure?
I think so. I think we've seen him.
He was breathing pretty damn heavy in that fight on Contender Series.
But he's chasing somebody around, having to like overswing.
But what if somebody's standing in the pocket and actually forcing him to swing more than one shot at a time? That fight, yes, he's chasing a guy, but he's throwing one punch. Okay, one calf kick. Now one punch, one calf kick. The thing about Da Silva or
Severino
is all Brazilians. My girlfriend's the same way. It's Cassar Da Silva.
Of course it
is. Same name. That dude puts volume together.
He does.
He puts a lot of volume together. And the thing is he's not afraid to stay in the pocket. That dude was one of the worst performances I'd ever seen.
See, I think that's actually going to help Lima, because I think Lima is very comfortable in the pocket. And I don't think you want to be there with him.
I think Igor's fine in the pocket. Yeah. Look at his sparring video, like his Instagram. I was watching this. He's sparring with Joe Anderson Brito, who's a thick 45er.
Yeah.
And Joe Anderson's trying to knock this kid out. And he's just standing there. catching, firing back, catching, firing back. I think he's going to be fine trading in the pocket with a 25er. Now, I do think that Lima has a power advantage for sure, much cleaner, sharper strikes, but I like the volume that Igor puts, and he's very comfortable slipping, countering.
Now, if there's some grappling involved, where does that go?
I think it's on Igor's side.
You think so? See, I think that if they're just rolling around jiu-jitsu, I think 100%. I think in a fight when somebody has to take somebody down and you got Lima just hipping out and sprawling and getting back up on top.
You didn't see Lima on his back fight. Just chilling there?
Which fight was that?
I think that was the fight right before the Contender Series. He got taken down and then was just chilling in his guard, feet on the hips, just chilling, relaxing.
I watched a few fights before the Contender Series where he would get taken down and just scoot, get back up. And one of them, he was like relaxing for a second, but then he popped up.
I think here's the thing about Lima. I think his wrestling is actually really good. I think he's got great hips, great speed on his defense. I think it's almost like we were talking about with C-Rod and Josh Weems. Mm-hmm. If they were to wrestle, Weems would never take C-Rod down, ever, ever, ever. But C-Rod was here wanting to knock his block off so bad that he forgot that it's possible that Weems would shoot on him, yeah. And then he got taken down, right? And I think that's what happens to Lima, is he wants to fight so bad, and here, come on, that he just forgets about the takedowns. And I think that could happen here with Igor. To me, Pierce or Big Bird, he tipped his line with Lima at minus 115. Which I think is an awesome line. But now that we're looking at this and he's minus 170 and Igor's plus 150, like that changes a lot of things for me. I think this is a great fight between two really good prospects. Man, 150 looks pretty solid to me for the guy who's going to put volume in. Maybe he has a more complete game, even though his striking may be not as good. I don't know.
Okay. So you're going Igor?
I'll go Igor.
I'm going Lima.
Okay.
Next up, Jesus.
All right, we got Montserrat Rendon at plus 145 versus Daria Zeleznikova at minus 175.
Give us your thoughts. I'm curious on your thoughts first, because I watched tape on this, and I know that you have watched a lot more tape on Montserrat, especially in the against
Vidal, yeah.
Even before that, in Invicta, the chick who's like 4-4.
Brittany Cloudy.
And yeah. I'm curious to hear your take on this.
Well, I think that fight was a robbery. I love Brittany Cloudy. I think Brittany Cloudy is really, really solid. A little bit of cardio issues, whatever, but I think Brittany Cloudy is really, really solid. And then we see her against Tamara's Vidal. And Tamara's Vidal, I just think, is not real. She's not a real human being. And so I picked Montserrat in that fight. But God, that was a bad fight. It was a horrible, horrible fight. And I'm watching Montserrat's footwork. She is like heel, toe, heel, toe, heel, toe. Everything is like when she punches, she squares up. She's like constantly reloading. Everything is coming wide. It's so slow. Everything is so freaking slow. She's old. She's unathletic. She can't really, I don't even know what we're doing here. Like, to me, it almost feels like, all right, what's the catch? What's the trick line here? Because that little Russian chick, she's fast. She swings some 1-2s. She's dynamic. She's got a swag about her. I've already played her at Juice, and I'm not scared by this Juice. I like it.
Okay. It's funny. I was watching it, and I'm not as critical on Montserrat's technique as you are. She just plods forward, but she has her hands high.
The hands are fine, but it's the footwork. Like literally.
No, yeah, she's literally heel to toe.
Heel to toe. No balls of the feet.
Yep. But when you said it, I'm watching her. I'm like, this is the slowest person in the UFC. I've never seen punches come that slow.
Which is hilarious. She beat Vidal, because in Vidal's, debut,
kind of moves.
She's like moves well and does things better than I expected.
Yeah. Montserrat, and then they call her a grappler, but she doesn't have takedowns at all. She'll like kind of Frankenstein her way to the cage and push. And then you look at Daria, who's fast. She's actually fast. She's athletic. She moves well.
She has a better 1-2 than most guys in the UFC.
Now that said, she does kind of Belbita it a bit. If you watch her, she swims. She is just.
Come on. Not that bad.
She is not far off of Belbita swimming. And, Montserrat honestly isn't too far off either, because everything comes so wide. This is going to be a swimming championship over here. but the thing is that Daria, whatever the hell her name is, she's actually fast. She is athletic. It's hard for me to gauge her size, because I think the women she's fighting in Russia are smaller. I think Montserrat is going to be huge. compared to her.
Do we have heights listed on this?
I think they might even be like the same height. I think Monstrat is listed as an inch taller or something like that.
I literally don't care about that. I've taken the size thing almost completely out of my capping altogether, because what I'm realizing is so many times I would see the face off and be like, whoa, the size is so big. And then come to realize it almost never matters.
No, generally it doesn't. But with two women who aren't tested. So if you like, size isn't going to matter when you have Jessica Andrade and like Chookagian, you know, stuff like that. Like these are girls who are at the top of the division. So they're big enough, strong enough, technical enough to like to do stuff. But when you have a big disparity and you get like you see that her fight, Daria's fight before the one that she lost two fights ago.
That chick is tough. You know, that chick eats glass for breakfast.
True. No, she is tough. And honestly, I thought it was a bad stoppage. I don't think it should have been stopped.
Yeah.
But when she got on top, it was kind of like, man, she didn't know what to do. And if Monstrat just one thing that Monstrat does well, she catches kicks. And she did that with Vidal two or three times in their fight, caught the kick, brought it down. Daria doesn't throw middle kicks that I've seen. She throws low kicks. So I haven't seen her throw the middle kicks. But you slip on a banana peel and a big chick gets on top of you. I did like a few fights back, Daria was on her back and was immediately attacking and moving and going, defended some takedown sprawl. She did a lot of stuff well. But then again, in that last fight, and so that's why I wonder durability-wise.
That chick's a good grappler.
No, I get it. I get it. But I get it. I'm not saying I think she's going to lose. That's just what worries me about this is that does she end up, is she one of these girls who we see looks great on film, but the talent is so low and the size is so low. And we see that with a lot of the Japanese fighters and with the Chinese fighters years ago, when they would come to the UFC, they would be so undersized because they're barely cutting weight. And yeah, they're both 5'8", 135, but there's a big discrepancy on fight day and everything. And that's what I worry about here in terms of size. So I like Daria. I think she does well. I think she's going to win this. Just the size and the durability of her. If Monstrat falls on her 3 minutes into a round and she just kind of lays on her, does Daria have the ability to get back up? So we just haven't seen it. We just haven't seen it. We don't know. And we haven't seen Daria fight a girl who's good and then get out of those positions. So that's my question.
I mean, okay. All right. Whatever. And we'll move on to the next one.
I like Daria here. I don't know why you're mad.
It's just whatever, you know, whatever. This is like, hey, this is like that time I bet, what, $15,000 on Haley Cowan and then
that fight got canceled. Like, well, and that was the one you bet money on her. And I was like, hey, you didn't bet money on Haley, did you, on this fight?
What did I say? I was like, nah.
You're like, yeah, I did. And I'm like, because blah, 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 blah. And you go, well, it's too late now.
Thank God that fight got canceled. If Eileen Perez twerked after losing me $15,000, I would have done some.
All right. Next up, we have Steve Wynn and Jarno Ahrens. What are our odds maker?
Ahrens is +160 and Wynn is -192.
This is going to be a good fight just in terms of like just an actual fight to watch. And I really, this is a funny one to call because I really like Jarno Ahrens. I like him. I think he does a lot of stuff well.
Yeah.
And I think he looked really good in his loss to Choi. I mean, of course, outside a calf kick in the end and, you know, he kind of fell over and this and that, but that adds up. And then on the other side, you have Wynn, who is technically really sound. He does a lot of stuff well. He's super sharp, has a really good jab, doesn't do anything that's like wasted and is really clean. We haven't seen him grapple a lot. I mean, we saw him lose to Alan Cruz up a weight class. I think up a weight class, right? Are they at 45? Yeah, they're at 45. He lost to Alan Cruz, I believe, at 55. I could be wrong there, but I thought that was at 55. In a fight that was, you know, Alan Cruz is awkward and big and tall and flying need him. And my issue with Wynn is that he's only fought twice since then. And he's taken large chunks of time off. And then the discrepancy. If you just watched Steve Wynn and you took away his opponent and it was just a shadow, you'd go, okay, he's good. And then you watch Jarno Ahrens, same thing. You don't know who his opponent is. You don't know anything about his opponent. You say, all right, he looks good. But Jarno is losing really good fights to Gomez, who we've seen is really good.
He's good, yeah.
And to Choi, who is really good. He's just kind of lost his chin. And then Steve Wynn looks really good, but against
AJ Cunningham.
AJ Cunningham.
And that little Thai guy who sucked.
Who was horrible, just stumbling. I mean, that was horrible.
Maybe one of the worst to ever appear on Contender Series. Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, I'm really at a loss of words on this one. I kind of lean Wynn on nothing more than not messing up and just being there to do it. And honestly, the coaching, he trains with Fortis. Those guys do watch film and set up game plans.
Is there like anything in particular like that, like maybe they say to their fighters like kind of often or?
No, I don't know.
Like maybe the left or the right side or maybe the left again.
Do they go to the left or the flank? Left, Steve, left, flank left.
Did you watch the Kennedy fight last week? Oh my God. I have to imagine. Sorry, I don't know if you're finished, but I have to imagine that like it's almost like losing their fighters' fights. Hear me out on this.
Okay.
Hear me out on this. Kennedy's in a close fight with OSP. Okay. Kennedy's in a close fight with OSP. And then you have someone scolding you like, you're fucking this up. You're doing it wrong. Fucking do this. And the judges are like kind of like listening like, yeah, he's really not doing it. Like the coach is basically telling the judges, like, you're not doing enough. And I think, I don't know if you can speak on this, but there's like a fine line between trying to get your athlete to do what you need them to do without also simultaneously tanking it and making it look so horrible for the judges.
Yeah, a lot of the coaching that you hear in the UFC is really, well, except for his, I think a lot of it is coaching the judges versus when you are coaching your fighter, but then you're also cheering, yeah, it's good, you know, good right hand, Kennedy. That's right, Kennedy, because you want the judges to hear it as well.
Exactly what I'm thinking.
Yes. So, yes, that said, it's weird. I think I've noticed a negative connotation around coaching the judges a little bit, and they're kind of catching savvy to it. And I think that is annoying them at this point. That said, I don't think you should be scolding
that
bad fighter
because it's a close second round. Yes. And then the judges sit there after the round with their scorecards and they're like, man, to me, that looked like a close round, but clearly his coach thinks he wasn't doing shit.
Not even on a conscious level, on a unconscious, subconscious level, you hear somebody scolding somebody as you're watching them and they're like, yeah, they're not doing well. Watch the fights at all. You watch the fights, turn down Joe Rogan, and you're going to have a very different take than watching with the commentary a lot of times.
I just couldn't help but feel like that honestly made a huge difference in the fight. I didn't watch the first round. I was driving to Las Vegas, and I only heard the second round. And I'm like, man, like I'm reading our Discord chat. And I'm like, man, it sounds like a pretty close fight. But then I'm hearing Saeed just like going nuts. And I'm like, dude, they're not going to score this for Kennedy here. Like, how could they? Saying, you fucking idiot. You fucking retard.
Mid-round, he's like, swing. You blew it, Kennedy. You blew it. You're losing.
You lost the goddamn round.
You lost the round. You lost the fight. And you lost in life.
And judge number one's like, dude, I kind of thought he won that round. Like,
I kind of thought he did. But man, I don't want to fuck this up.
Is he seeing something that I'm not seeing?
So
that's real.
The thing with that. So, yes, I think that's absolutely a thing.
What fight are we on, by the way?
Jarno, Steve Wynn. But that said, so everything, getting back to the fight, I think he actually does a good job of coaching his guys and getting them to victory. And the thing with Jarno, with everything that he does, there's two things why I lean Steve Wynn on this. And one is, outside of the uppercut that dropped Choi, there wasn't a lot in the favor of Jarno. I mean, he was there and he looked good. He did a lot, but it wasn't
he cracked him quite a few times.
He did, but he was just like kind of swinging. It wasn't like he was like picking him apart or really.
You're saying setting a groundwork.
Yes. Like setting a groundwork. He landed in the combinations. Great. He threw. He did a lot of stuff well, but it didn't seem like he was systematically doing something that was bringing him to the victory. He was just fighting.
Literally 2% of MMA fighters ever do that.
I know. I'm not saying. So then the other thing, though, is that on the start of that fight, Jarno was doing a lot of feinting and a lot of not fighting. And he was trying to draw Choi in. He's moving his hands, and he's doing a lot of stuff trying to draw Choi in. And when it didn't work and Choi didn't take the bait, he just kind of started swinging. And that's what I see here with the Wynn thing. But he shouldn't have done that. If you start feigning, you're trying to find a read and this and that, and you don't get what you want, settle in and just jab. And then just jab again and jab again and jab again and feint and jab again and be patient. and do little things, but he didn't know what to do. And you see that a lot. And with Wynn, I think that Wynn is going to stay disciplined, and I don't know that he's going to bait on all of the feints. Jarno could absolutely win, and I really like Jarno. I think Jarno is like going to be one of the best guys that we've seen in the UFC, who might lose three in a row, and I think it's insane. But I lean Wynn here with just being patient, probably being a little bit more better coached, and knowing his path to victory.
I'm gonna make this this parallel here. You guys tell me if I'm way off. So a lot of the things in my mind, like to me, they make sense, and then everyone else is like, what the hell are you talking about? Steve Wynn, watching him fight AJ Cunningham. Now, I'm a big Steve Wynn fight, yeah. Fan. Jeez, I cannot talk to you. Why do I get paid to do this, man? This is crazy. First of all, also, I would like to say, like, you guys got to give up the fraud stuff. Like, fraud, everyone calling JDM a fraud. Like, JDM's not a fraud. Oh,
who called JDM a fraud?
Oh, my God, so many people. Oh, no. He's a fraud. He's been exposed. Every week, yeah. People go on diatribes of, oh, this guy's a fraud. It's like, not every fighter is a perfect fighter.
Yeah. For the record, JDM's my favorite fighter. I still thought he was going to lose to Gilbert based on what we saw.
But he's not a fraud.
And
he's good.
He's not a fraud. And then he ended up winning. Like, good for him. He did all the right
stuff. You can lose a fight and not be a fraud.
Absolutely.
Even Gaziev the other week, like, he's not a fraud. We just know he has bad cardio.
Yep.
He can strike. He can wrestle. He can do a lot of things well, but he has bad cardio.
Not everyone has the same skill set.
So it doesn't make him a fraud.
Get to your point here. I'm bored.
People are so critical of Steve Wynn. And
are they?
I cannot believe it. Because Steve Wynn is just solid. Like, he just does everything
really
well.
Good.
Does everything well. There's not a thing that he's like, wow, that's a huge hole in his game. Like, he's fine. He's not like, you know, Volkanovski, but he's fine. And I don't get this whole, like, Wynn's a fraud and Wynn's overrated.
I think Wynn is really good. I think the most telling thing about this fight that we don't know yet is Jarno is fighting really, really good guys, and Steve Wynn isn't fighting really good
guys.
When
the level kind of evens out.
Yeah, but we haven't seen anything that really shows that Wynn shouldn't
be
there.
All right, so I'm going to get to this parallel here. Okay, there's a couple guys that we talk about this a lot. They do a lot without actually doing anything. And Josh Quinlan is one to me where he, like, looks the part on the feed and he'll, like, foot feign and do all this, like, crazy stuff. But, like,
somebody I know just got a fight with Josh Quinlan.
Awesome. Out of the UFC, I'm assuming.
No, in the UFC.
Oh, shit. Okay, great. Awesome. Yeah, he does a lot of these, like, foot feints and, like, sidestepping, but, like, doesn't actually know how to, like, make that work for himself. And then Markel Medeiros is a lot of the same way to me. That dude is so slick and technical and moves his head and does everything well, but it's not like he feints and then flicks the jab. And
Blake Builder. Blake Builder looks the part. Man, go watch his Instagram. And then when it comes time to fighting, he just can't figure out how to
make
it work.
You can faint well in the gym, but then how, like, they don't know how to, like, faint and then, like, actually flick the jab and to make, like, those things work for them. I'm a horrible puncher, but at least one thing that I do is I faint a lot and I fuck around enough where it gets people to give me a reaction and I don't even have to swing. I'm just like, okay, well, there's the reaction I needed. He did that with AJ on the Contender Series fight. Now, AJ is so bad and such a punching bag, it didn't matter. But I'm sitting here watching him, and he keeps hand feinting him. And AJ's too dumb to know that he was hand feinting him, so he just kind of stood there. And then Steve was like, shit, what do I throw now? Like, he just didn't throw anything. It wasn't until, you know, AJ comes in charging in, and he just gets clipped. And honestly, that was just him reacting, just throwing from the hip that rocked him. I think that Jarno doesn't need to be as pretty as Steve. Steve seems like he has to have everything just right, just perfect. Like, I'm fainting. Okay, now this is what's looking good. Where Jarno will do that, and then he says, fuck it, I'm going to throw leg kicks and uppercuts and spinning back kicks, and I'm going to go crazy. And I think he's pretty dynamic and pretty explosive, and honestly, just better for a fight. I like Jarno here.
I'll flip. I'm flip worthy on this. When I was watching Jarno, I was like, Jarno's the one. And then I'm watching Wynn. I'm like, gosh, this is really close. I was really torn on this. And I was like, I think Steve's coaching is actually going to be the difference in his fundamentals and staying disciplined. But I'm happy to jump on the Jarno train.
He just is kind of like a wild man to me. Honestly, based on your outfit, that's not the first time you flipped.
No. Cody Gibson, Miles Johns. Where are we at?
Okay, I'm doing a double Fortis fade parlay.
Oh, we're fading twice in a row?
I guess I don't understand this one. You know, you have Cody, who is former UFC. He almost knocked Ray Borg into next week, and he ended up losing that fight, but it was a great fight. He's super tall. He's super high volume. He can wrestle. He's got good fight IQ, good cardio. Like, the dude is awesome. Outside of him getting clipped with a giant overhand, like, how is he not going to wear down Miles? I really wanted to make a case for Miles, right? Like, man, his power and the way he sets things up, but everything is these little tiny T-Rex arms just throwing these wide, super wide hooks that are so predictable. And he looked great in his last fight against Argueta, but Argueta does one thing and only one thing.
And he was suspended afterwards for peds.
Adderall, come on. We don't really count that.
Miles Johns was for some a Tyrenobol tabulate or something like that. Okay. Like whatever Jones was
but
up for.
Either way, it's just becoming so increasingly easy when you know someone wants to grapple to just be able to defend the grappling and then just swing on them. Easy game plan. Cody is so good at mixing it up, long punches to the body, high volume, keeps the pace, even when he's tired, can mix in the wrestling. He's so much taller, so much longer. Like, I like Cody Gibson here.
Man, I want to like Gibson, but I don't trust his age and his cardio. You talk about his cardio. I feel like he's a first round hothead. And
he
then
throws 300 punches a round.
Yeah, but then if he doesn't kill you, I feel like he fades out pretty
okay,
hard.
And then Miles Johns can match that pace. Do you think his cardio is phenomenal?
I think his cardio is
always failed him. Look at the Castaneda fight.
Yeah, yeah. But I thought his cardio looked good in the Argueta fight, considering the type of fight that it was. He'll scramble. His grappling cardio is better than his striking cardio.
100%. Like if it's a striking fight.
He can grapple and do the stuff. I feel like he's durable. And I would like, actually, if Cody were to go up the middle a lot with the knees more, I think that could hurt him, the height and the range and stuff. Because it's weird. There's certain people that, like, we've seen Miles get knocked out with a knee to the face before. Certain people that can take a temple shot but can't take a shot to the back of the jaw.
Some people can't take back shots.
People can't. Oh, Jesus. I don't know. I like Cody Gibson. I don't trust Cody Gibson. And at least with Miles, you know what you're getting. And I think Castaneda is infinitely better than Cody Gibson.
Okay, fine.
And I think that, yeah, I look, I love Cody Gibson. I got to go Miles John here. I think
crazy.
That Cody's going to win round one. He's going to fade out a little bit. And then Miles is going to slow the pace and win round two and round three.
You're insane. All right, let's move on to the next one. I'm getting fired up. I'm getting pissed off.
All right, Ricardo Ramos and Julian Arosa. Man, this whole fight card is just a good competitive card.
This one's competitive for the wrong reasons, though. It's like one guy who's kind of disinterested versus one guy who can die at any time.
Right? This is weird. So if you look here, here's some stats for you. Julian Arosa has been KO'd, I think it's 7 times, like 7 out of 9 times. So
that's just in fights. Imagine the gym.
I know. So his losses are just KO, KO, KO. He has never been submitted. Ricardo Ramos has 2 KOs. Do you know they're both the same? Spinning back elbows.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Spinning elbows. That, yeah. Both of them in the UFC. Other than that, he doesn't have any KOs, and he's got all submissions. And so then, you know, it is. It's Julian Arosa is really good and can just get death murdered. And then Ramos, who I actually like Ramos. I think he's decent.
Yeah, good skills.
I think he's very skilled. Just can screw up. Like he just like does dumb stuff. Like you saw the last fight, he got guillotined. He's just leaving his neck there for so long with zero
and a
regard.
Quick tap. Like
and then just, yeah, it was just like a fast tap. He looks great against Bill Algeo where he's just wrestling him and climbing on his back for 3 rounds and looked really amazing. But the thing is, Algeo, I was trying to find a comparison with Arosa and, you know,
it's a good comparison, big noodle guy.
Right. And the difference, though, why I think the fight went so well for Ramos in the Algeo fight is Ramos would take Algeo down and Algeo would like scramble to get back up. The difference is Arosa is going to attack submissions. And I think Ramos, knowing that, is going to have to bail like a lot sooner. And I think the takedown defense of Arosa is actually going to be better than Bill Algeo because he's going to attack instead of just defend. And so
now what about the cardio?
Therein lies the trickery of everything.
Arosa is a great 1-2 fighter.
Yes. But when he starts going and going and going, you'll definitely see him.
And he's swinging everything from his hips because the hands are always so low. So he's got the weirdest style.
Such a weird style. And then, but then he ends up finding these head kick knockouts.
Yeah.
So, but the thing is, I feel like Erosa is losing to better strikers in his last few losses. He's lost.
It's not like Ramos is not a good striker, though.
No, but he's not. He lost to Padilla, and I thought there was a little bit of an early stoppage, but Padilla's good. Alex Caceres has really tricky stuff. Choi, left hook, Choi. Arce, head kick. Devontae Smith, punches. I mean, we're going down. I mean, just... So, I don't know that Erosa is going to get one punch KO'd. Or one, like something big and dynamic is going to hit him. I think it's fast stuff down the middle where it's just volume and it's just going. I lean Erosa here. And I really didn't think... I didn't want to. I wanted to lean Ramos. His age, his grappling, his durability. Erosa is probably like 50 in MMA years.
Oh, no. I'm talking... Oh, okay.
Yeah, Ramos. So I lean Erosa here, and I don't want to. I want to go Ramos. I just... Erosa's just a tricky son of a bitch, and I kind of see him pulling it off somehow.
I'm going to agree with you. We don't need to necessarily go back into it. I'm going to pass on this fight altogether. Like, from a gambling perspective, I'm just going to pass altogether, unless we see a good live opening. Yeah. But a lot of times, it seems like Julian wears himself out so much, like, trying to do all... I don't know. This is such a crazy fight.
Like, he goes too... He kind of does what Cody Gibson does.
Nah,
he's just too high volume... That he doesn't need to be. He's trying to win by 80 or 90% of the round, where he just needs to win 60% of the round.
Oh, this was the fight I was talking about when we were talking about Chael Sonnen saying, like, when you put your hands, like, when you keep your hands down that style, eventually you're going to pay. It's like Julian Erosa, like, has paid like 7 times or more because he always fights with his hands at his waist. And even when he doesn't get knocked out, he almost gets knocked out. And yep. It's like crazy. It's like somebody needed to pull him aside at some point in his career and say, hey, try this.
Nah.
Once.
Nah. Yeah. I like Ramos. I wanted him to win, and just I'm like, man, I think Erosa will pull it off.
So. All right, I'm on Erosa too. All right, let's.
All right, next up we got Trey Ogden and Kurt Hollibaugh.
Is it me?
What's odds? But
oh, jeez, I mean, this guy is so slow.
Well, guys, we haven't gone over the odds like the last 4 fights. I thought you guys were going rogue and didn't need me anymore.
You just start speaking.
I just thought I was the button pusher.
Just start talking.
Ogden is minus 155. Hollibaugh is plus 125.
Go.
Oh, someone's calling you. You want to pick up?
No.
We should do a call live on the air.
That'd be funny.
We should call somebody hilarious.
That was Eddie Cha.
Oh.
That'd be fun.
Oh, we have that Eddie Cha emoji in the Discord. Yes. It's the funniest one ever.
That's awesome.
When did I screenshot? Okay, anyways. We should call Tracy and we should grill her for her slow mile times. Done. Like live on the air. It'd be great. This fight and price feels about right to me. I like Hollibaugh's striking a lot. The dude puts combinations together. His boxing is really solid. And watching their two bodies, like, people are making a lot too about Ogden, like how jacked he looks. And I'm like, yeah, he looks slow and rigid to me. Like standing up, he's like very boxy and square and rigid. And Hollibaugh like moves really well, and he can kind of move like a boxer. Like he's solid like that. Obviously, the takedown defense is not the greatest. And I think the line is about right because you have the huge grappling edge for Ogden. And yeah, I mean, you have a huge grappling edge for Ogden. He's a good jiu-jitsu black belt. He's got good takedowns. Most of all, what I like about Ogden is I think he's a really smart guy. I think he game plans really well. On the feet, if they were to have a boxing match, I'm taking Hollibaugh all day long. But what I like about Ogden is he uses that jab, an educated jab enough, and then he will level change. He'll show the takedowns. All right, now you're worried about both. And now he can use that defensively and put things together to look for his grappling. Man, I think this is a vet lesson either way. Honestly, I kind of think this is going to go to decision. Geez, I would lean Ogden just on fight IQ. But if you told me that, you know, a round 2, round 3 KO for Hollibaugh is going to happen, like, I wouldn't doubt it. So I'm going to go Ogden, not by a lot. I want Hollibaugh to win.
I like that. The other thing is Hollibaugh's 37. So
yeah, but he's like an ultra vet.
He is. I you hit everything there. I don't have to say much. Ogden's jab is great. His fight IQ is good. We've been trying to fade Ogden forever.
Never works.
And he's actually good. He's actually decent. And
he's probably even smarter than he is good.
I think you're right. I think you're right. The real question is, how is Ogden going to deal with Hollibaugh's pressure? So I was trying to find his other fights, and I couldn't find anybody who pressured Ogden.
Mata. Nicholas Mata.
No, but Mata just stood on the outside. Mata would stand on the outside and then lunge big shots in, and he saw it a mile away.
And that's what I'm wondering, because if there's anyone pre that fight that you would say, oh, this is a good comparison, would be Mata, because he pressures everybody.
But I think Holabaugh actually just won't care about the range of the jab and will just pressure and go and just force the fight, whereas Mata wanted to, but then couldn't find his way in. So I'm with you. I think the wrestling is going to be the difference in the fight IQ.
I think a good bet here would be Ogden, decision only. So if he gets if anyone's getting finished, I kind of think it would be Ogden.
Yep.
Or Holabaugh, finish only.
I like both of those.
I think that's how I'm kind of feeling
so.
This fight.
I think so. Yeah, I'm with it. I'm leaning Ogden. I think we're both leaning Ogden, but I think watching it live, it's going to be like, how can he handle the pressure?
Yeah.
Is how that
pressure makes diamonds. That's what they say.
Oh, who's they?
They.
All right. Next up, we have Fernando Padilla -162 versus Luis Puello +136.
I don't know my thoughts on Padilla. So he knocked out Arosa. Looked really clean there, but that was early in the fight. And then the Kyle Nelson one, they were trying to give Nelson his walking papers. And Nelson had other plans. And I think a lot of that, though, I don't know. It's hard to say. It's hard to rationalize all of this stuff. I think Nelson hurt him in that second round. And I just don't know that Padilla ever really recovered.
And even then, you could have made a case for him to win the fight.
Absolutely. 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 But I forget what I thought about round three. But I definitely thought he lost round two. Yeah. Looking back at it, I was like, okay, yeah, he lost round two. And Nelson's a vet. He does a lot well. So, I mean, Padilla's takedown defense is good. His striking is good. He's long. My only issue with him is sometimes his sense of urgency. Like, he's just kind of there. I think it was that fight that one of the announcers said, he's not getting hit with... No, it might have been a different fight. But a lot of times when people are throwing stuff... A guy that we train with, Roman Salazar, he used to spar and fight. And people would throw stuff at him, and he would address every single punch. Like, you threw even a punch here, and he'd move, and he'd touch and catch. And it looks like more is happening than is. And you can't let people just out-volume you. It'd be one thing if you're just slipping and moving, and they see, okay, it's not. But when a judge is behind you, that's why you often see, like, 29, 28, 29, 28, and then 30, 27.
From the other side, yeah.
Yeah, it's a vantage point. So things just optics. And a lot of times... You know, in that Kyle Nelson fight, Kyle Nelson would swing and Padilla would just like frame and move and this and that. And it might not have even landed, but it was volume. It was touching. There's leg kicks. Stuff might not hurt. But if you punch me 8 times and it doesn't hurt and I punch you twice and it hurts, like, how do judges know if it hurts? We don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then, I mean, of course, you could tell if somebody's really hurt and they're rocked and all of that. So that said, I think that's his big, downfall. Pachulo, the dude's tough, man. He's just doesn't care. He is in your face swinging. It's funny because he has a high guard, but it's kind of like square. Like, he leaves the side of his head open a lot.
Yeah.
So he covers the front of his face, and he is just in your face swinging, teeing off, in the pocket, going. Ripping body shots. He is the 145-pound version of Igor Severino, kind of what we saw earlier. He's swinging. I kind of lean Padilla for nothing more than, like, he's fought better people. He's training here in the States, whereas Pajulo is still in Peru. He just doesn't seem as refined. He's not fighting the highest level guys. And so, like, I kind of lean, Padilla here. What do you have? Do you have a take on this?
Yeah, I kind of have some conviction in this one. I take this one a lot for Contender Series, and somehow I came out with Robbie Ring, which was one of my worst bets I've made. Also, I will say this too. Robbie fought about as bad of a fight as you possibly could have.
He was a heavy bag.
Well, his whole thing is being a grappler, and then he comes out trying to swing. And again, a guy that's like a Pajulo, whatever, right? He just keeps a high guard, and he's just going to press you and just tap you and tap you and tap you until you wear down. And all Robbie Ring did was throw overhand, 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 tried to dead him, but no setup. The problem with trying to dead somebody with no setup is you're not going to dead them. And then you're exhausted by the time it is time to do it, right?
And you deaded you.
And he deaded you. And that's exactly what happened. He even got a takedown, was on top, and then the dude just was like, all right, well, cool. I'm back up, and I'm going to knock you out. The big difference for me here, first, is the size. Pajula looks tiny to me for the weight class. And kind of what you're saying is, like, I don't think he's got the right coaches to pull him aside and be like, hey, you should probably be a weight class lower.
I think at 35, man, give me, this is a different fight.
Way different. Yeah, I think he's kind of fighting outside his weight class. He just looks small. And Padilla looks big. Like, he's big and he's got skills. The biggest difference for me is Padilla's jab. I think not only does Padilla have a good jab, but it's a powerful jab. And they made note of it in that last fight, right? A couple jabs hit Kyle Nelson on the nose and started busting him open. That jab is going to keep that pressure off. And if it doesn't, he actually is a good at inside fighting too. He kind of rolls his punches and he'll angle off. He fights like a boxer more than most people do.
And he has a height. If he wants to bring those knees up, he can.
That's it. Up the middle.
He's good in the clinch too.
Mm-hmm. Front kicks, elbows, knees. Like, he uses kind of all of his weapons, but his main weapon is that really long jab. And I think that's going to be enough. I think he's going to look a class above Pajulo, and everyone's going to make this case, you know, for, oh, Pajulo just never stops. But it's like, I think Padilla's fine too.
We've never seen Padilla's cardio is good.
Yeah, he's fine. Yeah, and I think that jab is just going to be a big deal for him. So honestly, I think Padilla's knocking him out. I think different class here. So I like Padilla.
Okay.
All right, cool. Next up, we got Billy Quarantillo, -166 versus Yusuf Zalal at +140.
Do you have a thought on this? You want me to go?
I'll go. I played Zalal on the opening line. I didn't get exactly the opener. I got like 220, 180, and 160. I think that's fine for me. And now I think it's an extremely competitive fight. Zalal, the thing that disappoints me always is he never really separates himself. He keeps such thin, close margins, and he just never lets his striking go. If Zalal, because he actually looks talented on the feet, if he would ever actually let his striking go, man, he would be so solid. But then he just grapples and wants to have a grappling game plan, which is fine. I think he's a way better martial artist than Billy, but Billy has the, I'm never going to quit, I'll never die, and I'm going to keep coming forward. You know, usually kind of counts on people to have bad cardio, and then he comes alive. I think Zalal's got good cardio. He can grapple for 3 rounds, and he's done it a lot. He's got clean, sharp striking. So I think Zalal's going to win, but I think it's going to be a cheek-clenching kind of fight.
It's funny you say that, because I love everything you said. The only thing that worries me is short notice with Zalal. But yeah, Billy Q is, his path to victory is people gassing out.
He's willing to play on his back too.
Yeah, he's willing to play on his back. Our dear friend here, Kamuela, we knew for you people.
How hard does he hit? Does he hit like a...
He had a hurt rib for the whole camp. We never mentioned anything. And we knew, like, hey, if your rib is fine, you murder this guy. And if during the fight your rib goes, you're fucked. And
end of the first round.
It was all fun and games until it was all fun and games.
Yep, it was all fun and games till about 10 seconds left in the first round.
Body kick.
They scrambled back up. Billy Q hit him with a body kick. We got back to the corner, and Kamuela was like couldn't, like, expand to breathe. It hurt his rib. And that was a wrap. And then,
producer, do you have any thoughts about Billy Q in general, this fight, anything?
I like Billy Q, man. Billy Q he's cool.
As a person, as a fighter.
Yeah,
as...
You asked me earlier if he was, you know, if he hits hard. To be honest with you, no, I don't. There was nothing about any of the shots that necessarily hurt. He's just very good at wearing you down. You know, he could sense in round two, I couldn't breathe. So he could sense there's a huge change in that second round. My output dropped significantly. I was moving back a lot more. And so he just chipped away. He almost reminds me a little bit of the Diaz brothers.
Yeah.
How they would just kind of chip away, you know, beat you up. Nothing about any of his shots really hurt. I never felt rocked, but it was just his consistent pressure that just broke me down over time.
It's funny you ask, because one other thing about that fight that struck me is after round one, I go into the corner, Kamuela. And I ask, you know, just, hey, we're here. Here's water, yada, yada. I could see that you're having trouble breathing. I go back and sit down. I'm sitting with your father. And from, you know, because it's quiet in the apex. Right. And I hear his corner go, this is what he said, something along the lines of like, this is what we expected. This is where we want him. Now we start our fight. And I was like, fuck. Fuck this dude.
Hey, I remember hearing that too.
And I was like, fuck, this dude's a cardio machine and we are in trouble right now.
You know, it's frustrating because I was in such incredible shape because all I could do that camp was strength and conditioning. I couldn't spar. I couldn't roll because I messed up my rib about 5 weeks out. So the rest of the camp was like, well, let's just run and let's just do sprints and let's do whatever we can do. So I was actually in great shape. And then with about, I remember the first round, actually, I was on top of him, took him down. I was on top of him. I was in his guard at one point before taking his back. And I remember hearing him breathe so loud. He's breathing so heavily. And I remember thinking, I can't believe this dude is breathing as heavy as he is. And
he's got to be tired. I got him right where I want him.
Yeah, exactly.
Now it's our fight.
Exactly. And
you're mounted on top of him and he pokes your rib and you're like, I fall over.
10 seconds left, man. It couldn't have been a more perfectly placed. It was like he knew that my rib was messed up. He hit me right in that spot, man.
I may or may not have told him.
So and then throwing money on Billy Q. I wouldn't surprise you, Brendan.
So with Billy Q, you said it. He's waiting for people to lose. I mean, to get tired. And Zalal doesn't get tired. Zalal has really good cardio and he has really good footwork and he moves so well and he understands how to like move and time takedowns and punch. And I think a Zalal with a camp wins this fight. I legitimately do. And I just think that it being short notice, I
don't think Zalal's ever not training though.
I know. I've gone back and forth with this a lot because I see the fight playing out the exact same way with a camp or without a camp. It's just, does Zalal have the cardio to push in round two?
I think
three?
He does. Honestly, this is my look. So I have and he's still an underdog, so you can still go grab underdog numbers. I have, you know, I have $1,500 on him at, you know, whatever those prices are. After round one, I imagine Billy's going to be probably an underdog. And now I can safely exit my position if I feel like it's not going to go good.
Okay.
I mean, Billy's a tough dude. I had another point I was going to get to, but I totally forgot.
The thing with Billy is that when he's 35.
Is he really?
Yeah, he's 35 and he has been in wars. And like, if you look at the Hernandez fight, man, Hernandez just beat the shit out of him until he was just so tired he couldn't beat the shit out of him anymore. And again, with Zalal, I thought Zalal looked really good in the Damone Blackshear fight. Thought he timed some takedowns really well.
Meanwhile, Billy's going life or death with Damon Jackson.
Hmm. And it's funny. I actually was surprised at how well I went back and watched that fight again. I was actually surprised at how well Damon did death gassing with him and how hittable Billy Q was, but from a tired Damon Jackson, who's literally just throwing stuff at him.
Still got a takedown when he was that tired,
but really was landing punches. Billy is just so hittable. Man, I like where you're at. I'm going to go with Zalal on you because I really do like Zalal over Billy. It's just knowing that Billy is such a cardio machine and that Zalal is taking this on short notice. But I do like Zalal as a whole matchup, so I'm going to stick with it.
I don't even know if Billy is a cardio machine. He just has a little more cardio than you do.
No. Here's the thing. So it's actually something I'm going to talk about with my fighters, with you guys, with people. I've actually noticed recently watching fights and watching tape. We all talk about cardio, and cardio is a big thing. I personally think 90% of cardio in a fight is just staying calm. Look at Dalgarian and C-Rod.
I was just going to say that. Look at Christian. He looks like he's dead on the feet. And if you watch Christian, he doesn't actually do anything. He just stands there.
He's just not freaking out.
Yep.
And so many people get so adrenaline up that they freak themselves out.
Even Dalgarian. He's like, man, I got to grapple for my life.
And he's squeezing life or death. If you put those two on a VO2 max, Dalgarian would probably smoke him. Who knows? I don't actually know that, but he's probably fine or they're equal, whatever. It's staying calm. It's not going nuts. And that is what I think Billy Q thrives in, is he's just there going, like, not panicking. And he has good cardio. You know he has good cardio. You know he actually has good cardio. He's going to work
it.
But the best
style of fight is great.
Yes.
And he's calm always.
And what he does is he pressures other people, and other people freak out. And that plays in his favor. So I'm with you. I'm on the Zalal train over here.
We actually have a good example. Is this fight next? Because this will be our Super Bowl. What's next?
Peyton Talbot and Cameron Simon.
Perfect. This is the perfect one because I wanted to talk about this. So I was watching both guys last night.
So we're moving on.
Yeah.
Let's move on. Talbot, Simon, go.
Okay, yeah. So we're watching both these fights last night, watching Simon and Christian. And Christian just is as calm as can possibly be. And it's funny. It's like watching Christian, he's not like, I don't even know how to describe it. He's not like some K1 Grand Prix champion. He's not like some slick, crazy, beautiful boxer. He just keeps a high guard. He's good in the clinch, and he just throws at opportune times. He throws enough to get you to cover and react and cover and react.
And he throws hard to where you don't just want to rush in.
Yeah. And then I'm watching Peyton and Junior. Junior's cardio was unbelievable in that fight. He
hold on. There's a fucking caveat here we got to talk about.
Okay, let's hear.
This donkey, without us, me and Eddie Cha knowing it, he had hurt his hand or his wrist going into that fight. And in the morning, we didn't know this until right before we went out. He took something like 1,000 milligrams of ibuprofen in the morning. Then in the afternoon, when we, like 1,000 milligrams, and then like another 1,500 or 1,800 milligrams of ibuprofen before his fight, because he wanted to make sure he didn't feel his hand, because something like that. And then it was like, and like, dude, that's such a blood thinner. That's going to absolutely murder your cardio.
Wow, that's really impressive, because he pushed through incredibly.
Insanely. And I was like, gosh, like he just, we didn't know that. And look, man, Talbot probably would have won anyway. Like Talbot was good, dude. Talbot is fucking good. Not trying to take anything away, but you just don't know stuff like this. And we're like with the Casey Tanner fight,
the mushrooms.
He tells us 5 minutes beforehand that he's sicker than shit and can't wrestle. And we're just like,
wow, you're facing the number one prospect in Brazil. Cool.
Like just stuff like this. You're like, God, they just, you can't script worse situations. But anyway,
honestly, that was an incredible fight, because I think, was it unanimous? They all gave Junior the first round.
Yep.
Yeah. Because the thing about Peyton is he is hittable and you can grapple him. You can do both things to him. Yep. But not for a sustained period of time. And it's not like I think he's like Billy Q. I don't think he gives up first rounds all the time. It's just he breaks you down and it takes him a second to break you down, because you're going to have all the spry, beautiful energy at first. And then you realize like you can't keep that up, because people don't crash the pocket. That's something that nobody does. People constantly back up and back away from strikes. And Peyton doesn't. He's always crashing the pocket. And he's always backing you up. So watching what Junior did in that fight was incredible, because he wrestled him. And you watch those kind of fights and you're just like, oh, this is a clear round three finish. Like he's going to get so gassed out, kind of like Dolgarian and C-Rod. Mm-hmm. And Junior kept wrestling enough to make it so close. Anytime he would catch momentum, he would grapple and do good enough to like make him reset and not get finished. It was very impressive from Junior in winning that first round. But I guess the way that I'm watching this, I think that that dude is dead behind the eyes, Peyton.
Unbelievably.
Like crazy. And he even does it at the end of every fight, but he is like legitimately crazy. And every interaction that you've had with him has been hilarious. And it's just like further cements, like this dude is like, it almost seems like he could be the best fighter in the world, but he's just doing this just to like tell his,
he's just bored.
Like, ah, I'm going to go fight the, like whatever. I don't think he's going to take a backward step, nor has he ever taken a backward step. And the thing with Simon, first of all, kid is really talented. He's super good, does everything well. He's got T-Rex arms, really short arms. And when
he almost looks like he could be a 25er. He's got like a little child body.
Yeah. I definitely think he could.
His body looks like Joseph Benavides. Kind of look like a,
but it's like someone chopped off half his arm and then, you know, put it back on him. And the thing is that he is so talented, but he still gets uncomfortable. Even against Kozlov, he was getting so uncomfortable on the feet and then would shoot and shoot and shoot. And his control is not amazing. He's got good jiu-jitsu. I'm sure if you rolled with him, he does all the right stuff. But in fights, his control is not excellent. And Peyton is really hard to just keep a hold of. Unless you body triangle him and just hold him there for the rest of the time, but that's going to gas your legs and that's going to wear you down. And then he's going to storm you and you're going to panic and you're going to shoot. And then he starts feeling the rhythm and the sprawl. I don't see a way that Peyton's going to lose this fight, even as talented as Simon is. from the styles. I just think Payton is way more comfortable in there. Doesn't give a fuck. He's going to keep pressing him. He's going to hit him. He's going to knee him. And eventually when Simon panics and can't get his takedown, I think he's going to be in some deep trouble. I like Payton here.
This is a funny one because, you know, we have a lot of ties to a lot of these fights.
And Both guys,
quips and stuff. But so Junior Cortez fought Christian Rodriguez on the contender. Then he fought Payton Talbot on the contender. And as we were... And Christian, we've seen, is just so calm and relaxed, and then he gets going and whatever. I'm watching, we're getting ready to walk out. Payton Talbot walked out first. Or actually, I don't even know if he did, but we were watching the screen. So we're in the back getting ready to walk, and they do both Junior's promo and then Talbot's promo or whatever the opposite, whatever, whichever one that went first. And they did Talbot's promo, and I'm watching Talbot. And I'm watching this fight, and I watched this fight for the camp. We knew what we were getting into and yada, yada, whatever. But as I'm watching, it was kind of the moment, like with Billy Q, like, shit. As I'm watching this, I'm looking, we're about to walk in 10 seconds, and I go, fuck, he's fighting Christian Rodriguez again. Well, here we go. And I mean, literally, I had that thought. And not like that I didn't think Junior could win or this and that, but it just, I didn't pull the parallels together between Talbot and Christian until right there, that moment. And I was like, God, this kid is just not going to die, and he's going to be calm, and we're going to have to out volume for two rounds.
And it's almost a different way. Like Christian is just calm because that's just his nature. He's just a calm guy and doesn't panic. It's almost like Payton doesn't panic because he knows he wants to fucking eat your heart.
The thing though is we knew going into that fight that we had to win two rounds and then not get finished in the third. And we won the first round. We won the first 2 minutes or 90 seconds of the second round, and then we hit a wall. And we just needed another minute or minute and a half in that second round.
And almost got it with the break from the nut shot.
Yep. So anyway, I like Cameron Simon here. Talbot is such a slow starter and Simon is fast, a fast starter. And Simon's going to win round one for volume. I mean, we just kind of, I would assume that just happens. We saw with Simon, he didn't slow down with Christian. They went three freaking rounds. Wild, wild, wild. And in the comparison between Talbot and Christian, I want to see those two fight, and I'm curious who's better.
I was just going to say that. That's a dream fight for me.
Right? And I think Christian is infinitely better than Talbot, every which way there is. Now, he can't do backflips, and he's not as athletic. He doesn't paint his nails. I would like to see Christian try and do a backflip, and the orb on the top of his body would just fucking weigh him down and smash him.
I thought you were going to say the earth would crack.
Yeah, it might. But I think Christian's just infinitely better. And I think Simon is good enough to do what he did with Christian and go battle and wiggle and go. And I think he's going to out volume Talbot. And we could go technical, but we already did a lot of the technical stuff. The technical stuff I don't really think matters. I think it's volume and cardio. And I think Simon has the volume and the cardio.
One thing that I mean, so does Talbot. It's like the same, but
he has the cardio, but not the volume. So he's not going to fade, but he doesn't have the volume. I don't
go back and watch. I was impressed with it, and it's smart volume. Simon might throw these pitter pat punches, but one thing I was really impressed with Talbot at, right? He's not just throwing 1-2s. One thing I think is really interesting about him. First of all, he's so long, and he finds whatever's available to him. That's something that you kind of talk about all the time when we're Dutch drilling and we're doing drills like that. See what's open. Don't just throw what you think you need to throw. Throw what's available, and you'll watch him. He'll throw the inside low kick, and then he sees your hands dropping, so he'll throw the right over the top, and then he sees that liver's opening up, and then he throws those body kicks a lot. I think he fills the space, and he's only throwing what is available to him at the time, and every time you make that adjustment, okay, now he's coming with the next thing that just opened up. Honestly,
do you think it's going to be a finish, or do you think it's a decision?
I think he can finish him. He does this thing. The only thing I actually probably don't like is he throws this check hook from his hip. It's like a fadeaway, like, boom, check hook. It's the only thing I don't like because it opens him up quite a bit, and he gets hit a lot from that. The dude's got volume. And honestly, he's got volume even when he should be tired from people grappling him.
Yeah, but that's like Sierra. They just stay so relaxed.
I think
Simon here. Let's move on because we have quite a few to get to, and we got to get the hell out of here.
All right, next up, we got Edmund Shahbazyan -205 versus AJ Dobson at +170.
I'll go. I like, Shahbazyan, we know, is dynamic and crazy and wild in the first round. He's actually really skilled. If you look at him with his fight with Nasruddin Aimavov, he looks good, man. He's attacking necks and he's doing stuff and he's getting takedowns and he was almost finished and he's getting out and all that stuff. But we've seen him slow down a little bit and we've seen him try to be a little bit more relaxed to not kill himself. And he's not going to win that way. With AJ Dobson, I think he got to the UFC a little bit too early. And I think he's getting better as we've seen. I don't think he's amazing, but I think he's durable. I think he's getting better. And he has good cardio. He has good cardio. And he knows how to wrestle. I think he's pretty smart with stuff. I think he's getting better. He's got... The thing that I found issue with him in his last fight is just volume. Just going and taking it. I think if he wanted to go take fights, he's a guy like you talked about, Zalal, barely winning or losing these things. I think that's AJ Dobson. I think he just barely wins. He fights a level of competition and does just enough and does, you know... And we've seen that before, but I do like him. I think he's getting better. I think his wrestling is good. I think he's educated. I think his grappling is good. Shahbazyan is really, actually, technically really good. He just goes full send and isn't comfortable fighting. He just wants to get out of there. We saw that with, Was it Jordan Wright? Who's the Beverly Hills?
Yeah.
Jordan Wright. The guy can hurt you a lot of ways, but then when he doesn't, he wants to get the fuck out. Ihor Poteria.
I don't know, but he put it together last
time. No, this last time he did. And I think he's actually finally coming into his own with that. But I think as for the most part, that was Ihor. He wanted to be a fighter and he wanted to do it. And he's really good. He's just scared shitless being in the cage. And I think that's kind of Edmund. I think he's just he wants to go out there and fight and compete and win, but he doesn't actually enjoy the fight. And I think that freaks him out. For nothing more than durability and cardio, I like Dobson on this by just not getting finished in round one and then doing more in round two and three.
I think this was a massive step down in competition for Edmund. And I think the cardio was going based on, you have Fluffy Hernandez, who's got historically the most amazing cardio in the world. And then Imavov, who's just really, really talented. I think this is a massive step down. I think there's a lot less danger presented for Edmund here. I think technically he's better and the UFC is giving him a layup with this one. I like Edmund.
Okay. There you go.
Cool. Next up, we got Carl Williams, minus 180 versus Justin Toffa, plus 150.
Go.
I think I like Carl Williams here. And it's hard not to. I made a really good, not a good case, but I made a case for the other Toffa when he fought, what's his name? Marcos Rogério, whatever. Williams can wrestle. He's undersized and he's got not the greatest cardio, but he pushed through pretty hard in that last fight. And he threw a ton of strikes and his wrestling didn't get off. You know, we saw it last weekend. I'm mad. I tried to bet huge on Tybura. I love Tybura all week. Once these Islanders get on their backs, that's tough to get them back up.
Yeah, I think we saw it last week. I thought Ty Tuivasa was going to win because Tybura's chin is a little suspect. And, you know, with, who is the guy that looks like Nosferatu, the polar bear?
Yeah.
Not Olenek.
Spivak.
Spivak. He got taken down by Spivak quite a few times and, man, ran to the cage, got back up, did all the right stuff and would get taken down and go out and get back up. And I was like, man, that was really good. And then you have Tybura, who's 40 pounds heavier than Spivak on you. And it did not work out
the
way.
And he's got better jiu-jitsu, I would say, too.
Yeah, I think, yes. I think you're right. I think you're right. Williams has got a blast double from hell. He's taking people down.
He's got best blast double I've seen in the UFC.
Yeah, and he times it well. And he's tall, and he's long, and he's gangly, and he's athletic. Could Toffa knock him out and land? And,
of course.
Absolutely. But, Carl has a lot more ways to win. One, it's just cardio, just wearing him down, taking him down, ground and pounding.
Yeah. Yep.
Just staying long and then finding his range. I think he's infinitely better than, was it Austin Lane?
Austin Lane.
Austin Lane. And I think it was Parker Porter before that. I think he's a lot better than that, than both of those, but he's also a lot taller. Well, not taller than Lane, but he's taller than Parker. Lane just swings and goes. He's an athlete and he goes, but... I like Williams here. I actually like Williams inside the distance too.
I think I do too. I mean, once Williams is purple belt in jiu-jitsu, once he gets on top, that's going to be rough. These Islanders, seriously, they're too fat. And I'm not just saying that.
Legitimately, they should be fighting at 205 or 185.
They're really good strikers. And I'm sure that their hits is probably like hitting bricks. And usually I would say you have to have a really good cage wrestler or just kind of a grimy, funky guy to get them down, because it sounds like they know their game, right? Like, you hit my hips, I'm going to defend well, and then I'll fire back. But Williams' blast double is so powerful and dynamic.
He takes people off their feet.
That's the thing. Head in the chest, and I'm grabbing your legs, and I'm pulling your legs out while I'm driving your chest forward. Like, and then once Toph is on his back, then what? He's going to get elbowed and punched and choked. And I like Carl Williams.
Okay.
All right, here we go. Main event, Amanda Ribas +180 versus Rose Namajunas -218.
If you haven't signed up for the Patreon and the Discord, do it, people.
Or don't. I don't
care. Or don't. Go to Bet Online. Get $1,000 crypto bonus cash. Or don't. Even listen to this. Or don't.
I don't care. If you're listening to this now, turn it off.
Don't. Yeah, if you're listening to this, don't.
Close your ears. Let the runtime go through, but close your ears.
Man, this is kind of, to me, this is a standard Rose fight. And she looks, she is going to pick Ribas the fuck apart standing. Like, Ribas is so wide. Her chin is out so much. She throws, every time she backs up, she does the, her arms separate. She looks like she's a ballerina.
That's the most hilarious trend in all of MMA.
I refresh.
I think Shogun started that, huh? He's like the first guy.
He might have, yeah. Like, I don't know. I mean, he was going to get picked apart for two rounds. And then if it doesn't get finished, does Rose slow down like we've seen her do before in the second Andrade fight? You know, Carla fight was just like she forgot to fight. And it's just kind of which Rose is going to show up. Is she going to be there for five rounds? Is the Rose that's going to show up who beat Wei Li twice? Or is the Rose that's going to show up who lost the most boring fight the world has ever seen to Carla Esparza? Rose's jab is beautiful. Her footwork is great. She is never on, not only is she never on the line, she's always inching left and right, and she's teasing that jab and floating off. The other thing with with that Wei Li fight, it was the first Wei Li fight, and I think it was I'm just looking, making sure that I'm not an idiot here. No, it was actually the Joanna fight. The Joanna fight and the Wei Li fight. Those, like, she threw that middle kick and head kick, and it looked, she saw a read. That wasn't just blind where she threw a head kick. She saw them reaching, and then all of a sudden it was like a toe that came up. Like, she is educated with her striking, and she is smart. In the Wei Li fight, she knew to start out-wrestling her toward the end, put her on her back. She's going to win right there. When she is on, she is freaking on. But Ribas, man, in her last fight, was it Pinera, Luana, whatever?
Yeah.
She looked horrible in round one, just got the shit beat out of her. And then that ATT South African cardio.
She's not at ATT, though. She trains at her family gym.
Yeah, but she goes up there and trains. So I'm sure they talk. Just like DDP talks with Simon.
Yeah.
They don't get tired. They have the same strength coach.
Oh, okay. Little Simon.
So, yeah, Simon trains with DDP.
Little Twinkie boy. Yeah.
He does not get tired. So in round three, does Ribas come on? Because she will come at you, and she doesn't get tired, and she keeps going and going and going. So I really like Rose here. If it hits round three, man, I would hedge some Ribas, depending on how the fight is going and stuff. But Rose is just a head case. She's infinitely better. I just don't know if she lasts later in the fight.
And that's what I wanted to say is, like, I've talked to people about Rose, and I said, does she really get tired? And from people very, 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 very close to her, she never gets tired. It's not ever a cardio issue. It's a focus issue.
Yeah.
It's not a cardio.
It looks like a focus issue to me. It doesn't look like she's tired. It looks like she's like, just loses focus.
She loses focus. And that's what it is. I think this is hard because to me, this is almost like the Ramos and Erosa fight. Like, is Rose's head in it? If Rose's head is in it, not a close fight. I think her.
Or if it's a 3-round fight, I'm going Rose 100% every which way.
It's hard for me to just think that like Rose is not 5 levels above Ribas. Like, I guess, do we say Ribas? Because that's how they say it in Portuguese, but yeah. we would say Ribas.
Ribas.
Ribas. She is wild. Striking is all over the place. Chin is up in the air. She can't really wrestle. She does, like, you know.
Head and arm. JV head and arm.
Head and arm and judo 100 toes.
100 times.
And Rose, with the weight put on her and bigger, and she knows how to grapple. She's actually a good grappler. If she's focused, this is not a close fight.
And Rivas is still toggling back and forth between weight classes. Her last fight was at 115.
Which is really tough, because then you can't build onto the weight class. You're still like, okay, I need to stay low enough where I can achieve this. I'm not putting on muscle. Whereas Rose is like, no, I'm here now. I'm at this class. I don't necessarily think this is a close fight at all. Like, Rose is one of the few people that does make reads, does set things up, sets traps for later, has game plans, where Hibas just kind of runs in there and just fights as good as she can, gets beat up in every fight and somehow squeaks it out. So I like Rose a lot.
So yeah, I'm with you. I like Rose. I just, again, round 3, 4, and 5, is she just looking up at the stars and just, you know, chasing butterflies or something like that?
Yeah,
so,
she could be.
Yeah. I like Rose here. Rose is legitimately really good. She's really good. I think she broke her hand in the Manon fight, right?
And she still made it close against the top girl in the world.
Yep. So there you have it. That's what we got. We're out.